Today is May. Am I right? I'm so confused. Wow. Today is May 9th, 2021, and it's a Monday morning. Monday, a Sunday morning. I'm really confused, but there are reasons why. The news are. I thought we had it hard here. We have it hard here, and this morning I learned that Times Square there was a shooting, and in the shopping mall of Ventura in Florida, there was a shooting. It's thank God that it was Shabbos, so at least anyone who's Shomer Shabbos, I trust, was not there. And I'm so confused that David Gold has sent me an email, "See you soon." And I thought he meant he's coming to Israel, and I wrote, "Halavai." Then I realized I'm looking at him right now on the screen. Jack, I just want to tell you that I have your questions, but I'll deal with it in the Monday class when we meet again. I just want to begin at the beginning and say a few words in Yonah Diyoma so that I'll feel better psychologically and physically. Anyone who read the Alonim over the weekend and read the papers and the weekend editions and you listen to the talk shows, everyone is asking why God did this to us. Very few are asking the proper question, why man did this to himself? That has to be the first question. This is not something we have no control over. Maket ha'saligagecha. You're all familiar with the Gemara in Yuma when the priests are running and we hurt each other. We turned it into a lottery instead of priests running up and knocking each other all over. And this is so serious. We have no government right now, and who do we turn to? And the government must step in, take over the area, take over the Hegdashim, stop the pettiness, rebuild the area, put a limit on how many people can come in exit roads, etc., make it possible for crowd control. This is the most basic question. Only afterwards can we ask why did God allow us to be so stupid that we have lo aleinu 45 korbanot. What's very shocking is circulating is something from the Yidr Rabbah, the Zohar, and it talks about the misu abaim v'chamisha padachshavei, and the number 45 is right there. So let me tell you, Jews like myself who grew up in a Litvish welt where the Zohar did not play a role, halacha lemaisa, you look at that, you shiver, you shake. But nevertheless, it doesn't exempt us from maket haselagakecha, achiv the oraita, the common sense. I think there's more to it too, but I don't want to go further. I think we must introduce into the entire school system the core curriculum. Youngsters being raised in this world in the year 2022 have to have some concept of what the world is about and how we have to act and what a human being has to do. It's not just let God take care of everything. And here it's maybe a wake-up call, but are our people willing to wake up? That's a different story. And it puts all the more responsibility and pressure and achrayut on people like us who grew up in the big world and are b'nei Torah, and we see no contradiction. We have to pave the way, show them this is the way to go. All right, that's one comment. The other comment is on modern orthodoxy and what's going on with the female rabbi. I have to say, I read an interview with Rabbanit Shira Marley Mervis, and there's no question that she's the only rabbi, she's the only authority, and all the questions I raised last week stand. I still recall when JTS started ordaining women, how upset Dov Zlotnick was, and here we are less than 40 years later, and why you graduates are ordaining women and appointing them rabbis. And ana ani holech, I have to be honest with you, my heart is torn. I'm a YU person, And I'm not part of the Haredi world. I differ from the Haredi world. But when push comes to shove, I choose Haredim over innovators of Devar Hashem Zu Halacha, the Talmud of the Rav. And I want to tell you, what I'm talking about now comes back to more than 40 years that this issue has been raised in my classes in the Kollel. And it's not just Halacha L'maisa, it's what's going on in Israel today. And remember my question, it was first raised, I still remember who raised it, Abby Kelman, Rabbi Kelman, many years ago, decades ago, and I don't want to go into the whole story now, why he raised it. It was a shoot-off of what happened in the Gush with the Baron Lichtenstein. And the question is very simple. Who do you feel more at ease with? Charedim in Geula, Meisharim, Beitar Elit, etc., or with the so-called Chiloni Jews in North Tel Aviv? Who do you feel more at home with? And this is exactly what's happening in Israel today. Do we have a government with Charedim or a government with Michal Michaeli, Avodah, etc.? Chilul Shabbos is the least of my problems with her. Here's a lady who doesn't want to have children, has no marriage, has a boyfriend she's with, but chas v'chalila marriage, don't bring children into a terrible world. She's made other statements, I understand, in Australia that I don't even want to quote, because I haven't seen it in black and white. I'm only hearing hearsay. Do you feel ill at home with her? She's modern, she's up to date, she probably graduated college, or with the Jew and Meir Sharim. Evidently, Bennett feels more at home with Gantz and Michaeli and Lapid and all that goes with it. The other Jews, like myself, feel more at home. When push comes to shove, I feel more at home to a Jew, Vashtet, Vashishavis, and Kashris, and Taras Mishpacha, and Ashtibel, and Anigan, and Rebbe, and Lerin, and Daf Gemara, and what kept us Jews for 3,000 years, 2,000 years of exile, enabled us to survive, to be reborn after the Holocaust. And this is the very question, and it affects all our thinking, all our lifestyle. The conservative movement 100 years ago had faced this very challenge, and the rest is history. So this is the way I understand it, and what's happened in Efrat is no different than Naftali Bennett and where he's pushing and where he's pulling at this very moment. I don't believe I'm incorrect in my estimation and understanding. And maybe I'm wrong. Could be that we have more in common with the so-called secular Jew. I don't know. At least I don't. That's all I can say. I want to also mention, Rabbi Grinstein sent me an interesting article, the Kranjec test, Kranjec. You can look it up. I don't want to go into detail. It's not. We have to teach Torah. But there's now a movement underway. When you quote more than two sources, one has to be from a feminist, from a lady, not just from men. In other words, if you quote from Rashi and Tosfot, you have to find a quote from a lady. And I wonder what they would accept as Nechama Leibowitz, right? I mean, she was as distant from feminism as I am from dancing at Kazovsky with Meir Tzidung at this moment. But I wonder if you quote her, will they accept it as one of the sources? Okay, my dear nephew, Dr. Zev Rothkopf, writes to me, I went to Solanta on Webster Avenue in first grade, and then to Akiva in the second grade. That was 1969 through 1970. Both had mixed classes at the time. So I see Solanta already, when it was still Solanta, underwent some major change in atmosphere. We mentioned about the Rav davening Sim Shalom at Mincha. So again, Rabbi Yehoshua Grinstein sent me sources from why the Rav does it, that the Rambam doesn't mention Shalom Rav and other Siddurim from the Gaonic period. But I like most of all the Rav's answer, the living tradition, where he says to his students who asked him, they heard him in Mincha, davening Mincha. This is already in, I believe this took place in the late 70s or early 80s. And they asked Rebbe, in my time, we wouldn't have had the chutzpah to say a word to the Rav. We stood in awe. But by the 70s, 80s, it was very shayach, Rebbe, what are you saying? Shim Shalom. And he said, what's the question? I grew up in Kaslovich. And that ties in with something else that the Rabbi Greenstein sent me about the eating outside the sukkah in Shmini Atzeret. So the Rabin, it's available. You can contact Rabbi Greenstein and get these, hear it, where the Rav says, all right, a chassid, what can you do? His parents didn't eat in the sukkah, his grandparents instead of us didn't eat, but you got to be consistent. You can't be a chassid and not eat in a sukkah and then eat gebrachs on Pesach. If you're going to be a chassid, you have to follow the chassidish party line. And Yeshua tells me something, I can't believe this to be true. The Rav says it, that they used to bring water to the Vilna Gaon, Leil HaSeder, to dip his matzah into the water. And I have to tell you, I know from Maisa Rav that the Rav ate matzah, gebrachs, he ate knedlach, not the Rav, the Vilna Gaon ate knedlach. He was makpid to eat knedlach, Leil HaSeder. But the version, bringing him water, I never heard before. All right, if the Rav says it, he must have a tradition. But it seems to me a little bit too harsh. Eating a knedel, all right, that seems par for the course. All right, be it as it may, I suffer on both ends. I'm a bindar litvak, so in Chutz Laaretz, I always say from the Sukkah Shmini Atzeres. And gebrachs, you know, I could only eat when my wife wasn't looking. If she was looking, oh boy, was I in a tzaris. My mother-in-law, my wife, can I nahara? Today already, my wife can't say a word because we don't eat at home, we eat the children. And they all eat gebrachs. So she can rebuke her husband, but she can't rebuke grandchildren and great-grandchildren. So there's an advantage to having great grand and great children, you can eat gebrachs on Pesach in front of your wife. All right, I want to go further, and I want to thank Rabbi Yehoshua Grinstein. He sent me a source. I tell you, I was overwhelmed by this source. And if anyone ever says to me that the Rabbanim are not mice and nefesh to help women and to help family problems, I will lock them up and send them to Michaeli for a lesson in womanhood and feminism. We raised the issue with the Noda B'Yehuda, coming back to the Noda B'Yehuda. So I quoted the Noda B'Yehuda. To me, the Noda B'Yehuda, I shiver and shake. This is not just the Nachron. This is the Noda B'Yehuda that Chatam Sofer will deal with later today. These Wachronim that even the Litvisher, who generally neglect the Achronim, but you can't bypass an Oda B'Yehuda, Chatam Sefer, etc. So Oda B'Yehuda said in that case of adultery, you have to tell the husband, you don't have to go to Beit Din, but you have to tell your father-in-law, you tell, break down, cry, and if he believes you, he has to divorce his wife. So I saw Yomo was very upset. He intuitively felt this is too harsh. Now, what can you do too harsh? Devar Hashem, zu halacha, salabala, salabala. All right? So Yomo found sources that I spoke about last time that in modern times already you see the Divrei Chaim, Reb Chaim's sons, but we're not dealing here with lightweights from contemporary times. Reb Chaim Sansava said you don't have to tell the father-in-law. And then you had other cases brought down by Rabbi Fisher and others, and they all took issue with the Noda B'Yehuda. So Rabbi Grinstein sent me Shelet and Shubat Yabia Omer. We're now dealing with Rabbi Avadya Yosef. And you're dealing literally with our generation and the problems that we have. Shelet and Shubat Yabia Omer Chelek Chet Yoredeya Siman Lamed Bet. And what's the Shaila here? All right. That a girl who was single lived with a man. All right, this is our generation today. God have mercy, what we're up against, as I've said many times. Sex is no longer sex. It's just a biological need. It has nothing to do with love and responsibility and marriage and devotion and dedication and fealty. Everything that the Rambam speaks about in Perek Tetvav Hilchotishet Halacha Yud Tetchav. Everything that we who know what marriage is about, what you saw, Reb Moshe with his wife, the Rav with his wife, Gedolei Yisrael, and how they treated their wives, what their wives meant to them, all this has been swept away. Sex is no longer sex. It's a biological need. You have to eat a steak. You have to do that. They have to have sex. Fine. Good. God have mercy on us. And I have to tell you, the North Tel Aviv crowd, no one marries until they want to have children. That's also a miracle. Then you have to hope that they'll marry with the Tzoha, with the Rabbanut. Tzoha specializes in these weddings. Instead of they going to Cyprus, they can have a Jewish wedding in North Tel Aviv. And this lady was living with a man, and she became pregnant, and she had an abortion. All right, abortion today is a form of birth control, no two ways about it. And then the lady moved to a different city, and Chazra, Yomo, don't leave me for more than 1 minute, 2 minutes. Chazra, she b'tshuva shleima b'shmirat Torah v'mitzvah. V'nisat lebachur yeshiva charedi lidvach Hashem v'choyu yachtov bi'ava bi'achva shalom v'reyut. It's unbelievable, like a Hollywood movie. This girl who slept around, and pardon me for the vulgar language, and she had a baby, had an abortion, and then she moves to a different city and becomes a total Baal Tshuva and marries a yeshiva man. I used the word that I was taught in Slabatka, a yeshiva man, a charedi, chared l'dvar Hashem, and they live together by Ava, Ach, V'shalom, V'reyot. She becomes pregnant, and she has a boy. No, what's wrong? The boy, the husband, says, we have a pigeon and Ben coming. I missed that, a one pigeon and Ben. It was a cesarean birth. Here it's not a question of a cesarean birth. Here it is plain and simple. It's not a petarechem. A bechor depends for a pigeon and Ben. It has to be a petarechem. This lady had a baby years before, all right? No one knows about it. And Reb Ovadia didn't know anything about his wife's past on that level, at least. I would assume he knew she was a Bala Tshuva. By the way, I have to tell you, this is a very serious halachic problem. When you're a Rav in the Western world and a couple comes to you, and you're going to marry them, and chuppah, kedushin, and the girl was on college campus, and they're not from, but all right, whatever the reasons are, they want a proper wedding, kedat v'kedin, and the girl was on college campus, ribbono shel olam, the chances are she slept with a non-Jew, she has a chaloy shem zona, you find out the boy is a kohen, right? This is not a simple matter. And it repeats itself 1,000 times over every year. Get the chash, college campus, girl, later Kohen, etc. And here he didn't know anything. And the girl came to her Rav, and she explained everything that happened. And she said, do I have to tell my husband that I had a baby before us? Because there'll be brachot levatoler at the Binyan HaBen. And she says she's worried stiff that if he finds out what happened before, yufar shalom habayit va'alul hadavar karov levadai shetifrogs beinehim meriba v'ktata V'achrita mi yishurena she'ulai yavou gam lidei gerushin. And he says, the poor girl is frightened stiff. She's going to tell her husband, imagine a yeshiva man, and I lived around, and I had a baby, and I went to the doctor, and I had an abortion, and it's not a petarechem. And he can say, what are you doing to me? Why didn't you tell me? I would have never married you. You embarrassed me. Imagine all his friends get all excited. A boy was born. A zacha was born. We have a Brit, we have a pigeon Haben. He now has to tell the world, there's no pigeon Haben, my wife did this, etc., etc. Oh, wow, what will happen? And he says, Oshema, this is Rav Avadja, Yesh Loma Gadol HaShalom, Shafilu Shem Shamayim Shenichtav B'Kedusha, Nimchak mipnei hashalom, v'lachein shevi al tasa adif. What a question. A sota. What do you do with a sota? You write a pasha from the Torah, pasha sota, and you amochek the pasha. Right or wrong, the bitter waters. And in that pasha is the name of God. And you amochek the name of God, because it is more important there should be shalom between the husband and wife. They should remain together. They shouldn't divorce. Well, I don't have to tell you, Rav Avadya Kadako B'Kodesh, it's a long tshuva. He goes through all the sources. What's these of saying a shame levatala, of making a bracha levatala? How serious is the Issa? Is it a Dioraita? Is it a Rabbanan? Because remember, whenever you make a bracha, you're saying something very constructive. Baruch atah Hashem melech olam, shehakol niyeh b'dvaro. No, even if you're not eating anything, shehakol niyeh b'dvaro is correct. Right or wrong? Borei priya gafen? No, borei priya gafen. It's a fact. God is borei priya gafen. Could be you can make a case, you'll see the sources in Rav Avadja, that it could be a bracha levatala is only a nisa derabbanan. And if it's so, he develops all the sources, and then he cites other cases. And he cites, this is Hungarian Rashad, that's from the Hungarian Gedolei Yisrael, the Greenwald family, that... Yeah, and it's amazing. You know, we think all of Aaron Kevin is very naive. He thinks for most Jews are tzaddikim, or from Jews are tzaddikim. So he has a shot. You'll see the sources. It's Rav Avadja Kadako B'Kodesh that this Hungarian Reb was asked, Penuya Shenivalala Relachad, that a young Jewish girl had relations with a non-Jew and had a son. Later, she married a widower who thought she was a virgin, that she had not lived with anyone, didn't have children, and she had a son. And if she'll tell her husband she already had a son before her marriage, milvat habusha, how embarrassed she will be, yargil imam rivuk tata, and the Rashad Paskins, She'ein anu chayim lahodia limnoa miisa bracha levatala mishat hapijan mipnei gadol hashalom. Exactly like Rav Avadja has the havi amina, the thought that gadol hashalom sota, all right, let him make a bracha, don't embarrass her, don't split up the marriage. And he quotes the Gemara, one of the Gemaras they quote the supported, and I don't think this is a perfect proof, but I just want to mention it because I think it's cute. K'tuvat yitzayin avad aleph, when we dance before the Kala, what do we sing? Kalana, Kaliya, v'chasuda. And the truth of the matter is that we sing it even if we know it's not true. You know, imagine if you know the background of this girl, you're the Rav, and she confided in you. So here you're singing, Kala Chasuda. far from chasuda. What about if her looks are not exactly what you would consider a perfect image of a female? No, nevertheless, we sing Kalana, Kalaya, and the implication is even if it's Sheka, but B'nei Dakei HaShalom, and he paskins Lalaki, you don't have to tell the husband. And he quotes the Divrei Chaim, that he shows that the Divrei Chaim is, that the Divrei Chaim goes against the Noda B'Yehuda. And he paskins, you don't have to tell the father-in-law. So here too, you don't have to tell the husband what happened before. And if you can get away with it, he says, mention to the husband that there's a suffolk if she's a bat halevi or not. And therefore, suffolk brachot lahakel. I would say if you can get away with it, mention that it was a cesarean delivery. It was not a petarechem. If that's the case, maybe you can get away with it. But I'll tell you, the problem here is very simple. Number one, generally speaking, doctors are not going to lie. I mean, doctors are not involved in lumdus and in a tshuva, even a frum doctor. This was a cesarean birth, period. The husband probably knows if it was not a cesarean birth, the normal birth, he knows exactly what happened. So I don't know if my yetzer is any yetzer. The one with the bat halevi, maybe it can get off the floor. But then again, if you know the family and taka and the shul, the husband is not a levi and he gets Yisrael and the machalatim with shlishi and shishi, it'd be pretty hard to spread the idea he's a suffolk whether she's a bat halevi or not. But nevertheless, he paskins lahalacha. You go ahead with the pidyon haben, and you don't embarrass her. And la halacha la maisa, he quotes another case from more sources, and then he says, I saw just now that the Vilyo Bakshi Daron, that was the Sfadik chief rabbi who died in the corona pandemic, lo aleinu, this past year, he also had a similar case, he gives you the source, and was also matir. So Rav Ovadia reaches this conclusion, Sof Dava HaKol Nishma She'ein Lahudia Lebal V'lo Klum V'yakayim Mitzvot HaPidyon B'brachot. And he paskins lahalacha that they can be matayim, the pidyon haben, they can make the brachot, halacha lemaisa, he paskins like the Divrei Chaim, he paskins like the Shmuel Vosna, he paskins like that's the Shevet HaLevi, and he paskins like Rav Fisher, and it's just something amazing where we take what seemingly is an absolute Issa, and to avoid busha, to save a marriage, to let the couple live b'shalom, b'chedva, b'yahava, we are mekil l'halacha ad kedei kach. So I think in relation to the Noda B'Yehuda, we have to take the approach that the Noda B'Yehuda gadluto b'mkomo omedet, but if the Shaila came up in the year 2022, yesh al mi l'smoch l'hakel. And maybe it's a reflection of our generation. Could be at the time of the Noda B'Yehuda, this was so rare that a man should commit adultery, a ben Torah, Talmud Chacham, adultery with his mother-in-law. But lo aleinu, in the world in which we live today, it could be ma'asim, I don't want to say b'chol yom, but it's much more wide that we come across these problems, the Balei Tshuva, and therefore, Eit Lasot Lashem Heferu Torotecha, and if you can bring it into a rabbinic level, so Gadol Kavod HaAdam Yesh Makom LaHakel. Okay, very, very fascinating. Then we went one step further, and we're getting involved now in a new question, The whole question of the clothes we wear, and this, what obligates us? What, where do we come from? Who are our forebears? How did they dress? How did we dress? What is the whole concept of Minhag Akum? Where do we draw the lines? And I gave you a bit of an introduction last week. There's a world of material on this topic, but I want to focus on the Mishnah Lachot and Reb Meisha and the Chatam Sofer. The basic concept is very simple, and I heard this from the Rav, and Reb Chil Yaakov Weinberg has a long tshuva. If something is universal, there's no concept of b'chukoteichem lo teilechu. I need not mention that we all breathe air, we all are human beings, we all wear glasses, this is universal. Clothes, all right, you see the sources becomes a lot more of a problem because we already find that the Jews had big skliyot in Egypt, and one of the skliyot was that they didn't change their clothes. We'll come to this. They didn't change, they wore Jewish clothes. As a matter of fact, just the Dashanut, which you heard from me, but I repeat it again because it fits right in with this Shaila, when suddenly they tell Yosef Avinu that Jacob is ill. And he runs with Ephraim and Manasseh to visit his father. And the father looks at him, Mi'elulach, who are these children? I don't recognize them. All right, even allowing that Yaakov Avinu was old, his eyesight wasn't the best, but not to recognize your grandchildren, not to put them into context, not to realize they're standing with your son. And I said this in a drasha, I told you for Rabbi Goldstein in homiletics, but you'll find it also in the Malbim. What's going on here? And it seems that the Ephraim Menashe, when they worked among the Egyptians, they dressed like Egyptians. They worked in Pharaoh's court. Their father got them jobs. And that too is permissible. If you have to work for the king, you have to dress like one of the king's helpers, workers, assistants. And they were dressed in their Goyish clothes. And suddenly their father got the message that his father is sick. And he ran with the grandchildren. They had no time to change their clothes. No time to get rid of the Egyptian clothes and put on a bekesher and a strimel and a gartel. And Yaakov Avinu was very shocked, very upset. Mi'elulach, what am I raising you? What are these grandchildren? What are they, goyim, gemurim, Egyptians? And right there you see, here's the conflict. Jewish clothes, Gentile clothes. All right, I don't want to go further. I don't want to leave you with just that part of the drasha. But to go one drop further, it's the best why you drasha as I knew why you. Again, I'm so frightened with this, what's happened here. And I don't know in New York if they know, if they said anything. These are not outsiders. This is Rabbi Riskin. This is Rabbi Branda. Kenny Branda. All right. So I don't know, it's a fabulous why you drasha, because Yosef HaTzadik answers, Banayhem, and he says, these are my children, but the children that God gave me here, and they have to succeed in an alien culture. We can't always live in a ghetto. And Yaakov Avinu is Maidal Ha'emet, V'yit Kula, V'yikrav Em Shem, Shmi v'shem avotai avaham v'yitzchak v'yitku b'rov v'kero arutz. They're going to, yes, you're going to have an internal challenge that we should remain Jews. We're b'nei Avraham Yitzchak v'yakov. Yes. At the same time, v'yitku l'rov v'kero arutz. We have to be successful in whatever land we live. And that's why Friday night, again, it's my own vart, but I can tell you, I heard many years later, the Rav on tape said it exactly in Moriah. So let me say it in the name of the Rav. That's why we bless the children. Ma pitom yisimcha lohim kefaimu konanshe. Where's Avram Avinu, Yitzchak Avinu, Yaakov Avinu? No, we're blessing our little children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren. We're saying to them, we don't know where what the future holds for you. We don't know where you're going to be, where you're going to live. But no matter where, you should follow the example of Ephraim and Manasseh. Jews who grew up living in an alien culture and remain fabulous Jews. That's the bracha we give our children. All right, and this is what I told you. It's Rabbi Chil Yaakov Weinreb goes so far that even a military funeral with a 21-gun salute, you are allowed to do it because this is not a Goyish custom. It's a universal custom. That's how we give kavod to a fallen soldier. All right. Fascinating topic. He differed with Rebbe Tzal Zsolti, as I told you, and I knew Rebbe Tzal Zsolti very well, but here Rebbe Chil Yaakov Weinberg carries the day. Now, Rebbe Moshe gets this tshuva, and that's where we left off last week. It's Igrot Moshe Yoredeya. It's the first time Rebbe Moshe dealt with Yoredeya, Siman Pei Aleph. And the question is, he gets this, it's from 1953, the immigrants have come into America. And again, you must listen to what I told you so many times in my Monday class. Until the mid-30s, every Jew who came to America, my grandparents on both sides included, knew they're coming to a Goyish land, a Gentile land. They're going to have to make compromises. They're going to have to change. By the mid-30s, you got Jews who weren't coming to America because they wanted to. They were coming to America and Canada, Australia, Britain, running away to save their lives. And these Jews, some of them were adamant, we are not going to let the Western world affect us. We are not going to change. And here, 53, it makes sense. It's like you come in Aliyah. The first few years, you're in Alech Hadash. You're in a state of shock. You have to, you know. When I came, it's not like today. You come in Aliyah to Har Nof. You come in Aliyah to Beit Shemesh. Your big problem is you'll never learn Hebrew. When I came, there were very few Americans around. And the Americans who were around were totally Israeli, totally integrated. I don't want to go further. If I would tell you some of the, had I listened to some of the advice I got, I wouldn't be sitting here in this chair teaching and teaching you and writing and doing. Thank God I had enough seichel not to listen. I have a lot of divrei Torah on this, but leave it for another time. But you see, by 53, these Jews were over the culture shock. They're living in Williamsburg, living in Borough Park, living on the East Side. May even start moving out. But they're starting to think, what's happening to me? Look at the way I'm dressed. How did my father dress in Poland? I look at pictures of my forebears. They're dressed completely different. Long bekishes during the week, black hats. Pictures, you don't know who. Great-grandparents, no one wrote, you don't write names. You know, it's our biggest mistake on pictures. You don't write names. You figure you're going to be around forever. Then 100 years later, they look at the pictures. My high, who is this? But totally different dress. Here I am sitting with a nice white, the blue shirt with a nice kippah. We buy the shalalim. Do you start to think, am I a good Jew or not? I changed my clothes. And this is the Shaila that he turns to Reb Moshe. Now, Reb Moshe quotes the Chatam Sofer. The Chatam Sofer has very little to do with changing clothes. It's a very important Chatam Sofer. It's one of the most important shuvah he ever wrote. You'll see why. From the point of view of scholarship, so much has been written. There's actually an entire book has come out by Professor Kahana, where he deals with this tshuva, the Nobi Yehuda, you see, because the Chatam Sofer and the Nobi Yehuda are caught up in shifting light. Until the 1700s, the Ashkenazic Jew lived in a ghetto. He was not affected by the outside world. All right, you can make a case to Hasidic Ashkenaz, but those who shine him, there was influence of the church, etc. But later, there's no influence, very little influence whatsoever. And here you have, for the first time, enlightenment, Jewish enlightenment, modern Sifrei Musa that we spoke about. And the world is shifting gears. It began already in Nodba Yehuda's time. Moshe, Mendelssohn, Nodba Yehuda were contemporaries. Then you come into the Chatam Sofer, already the 1800s. The Chatam Sofer's time is also, he lived in the part of Hungary close to Germany. And there were tremendous influence of what was happening in Germany coming in to the Hungarians near the border. Remember, I told you there was always a big difference between that part of Hungary closer to Poland and that part of Hungary closer to Germany. And the Chatam Sofer has to deal with modernization. And he throws out the words, if everyone moves, you have to continue the minhagim of your parents, grandparents. That the whole concept of makom shenahagu, yes, if all the Jews lived in Newark, New Jersey, in Essex County, this is where I spent 7 formative years, very important years of my life. I'm looking at Rabbi Zakheim. I knew his father, I knew his uncle. That was New Jersey, Newark, Essex County. And imagine if you had, the Jews there had a minig, whatever the, let's say a minig that they didn't eat meat, that after 72 hours, they weren't samach on washing the meat. That was their minhag. It had to be within the first 72 hours that you kashered it. No, then they move to a new area. If they move en masse, you have to continue that minhag. And that's the Chatam Sofer that Reb Moshe is quoting, but we'll get to that. I want to deal with the Chatam Sofer, give you an idea what he's talking about in this tshuva, because it's very fascinating and halacha l'maisa for us. And I'm quoting here from the Chatam Sofer. Let me give you the right. Chelek Orechayim, Tshuva Kuf Nun Chet. Now, it's not an edited edition of the Chatam Sofer. To the best of my knowledge, and I hope someone can correct me, there is no edited edition of the Chatam Sofer. When I mean an edited edition, a critical edition, it's someone who works, number one, goes back to the earliest manuscript of the Chatam Sofer. And that's crucially important to get the right manuscript. Sometimes if we have a handwritten manuscript, it's worth a fortune, because then you have what the individual wrote, what the Gaon wrote. Also, in an edited edition, you have footnotes. So whenever something is mentioned, everything is cited. It tells you where to find it, what he's quoting. When we speak and give Sheyurim or write Shuvot, not all the time are you're going to say, yes, this is what Chazal say. You don't give the source. It could be in your time, everyone knew Shas by heart. In the year 2022, we don't know Shas by heart. We need the source. You quote an Achron, you say in Italy, the Achronim said this, sources. We don't have it here. Halavai, we would have an edited edition of the Chatam Sofer one day. But here's the question. He gets this question from a Rav, a neighboring Rav, and the Rav heard that the Chatam Sofer was matir shaving for the Balei Brit during a time that you are not allowed to shave. And this takes us into the whole question of shaving. The Nodbi Yehuda dealt with it originally, then the Chatam Sofer. And does a Jew have to have a beard? Is a beard part of the Jewish gestalt? And you're going to see sources that at one time the Goyim did have beards, didn't have beards. The Jews, it's international, there's no Issa. As long as you shave in a proper fashion, we don't have to differentiate ourselves from the Goyim. Do we want to look like Goyim? What is the whole status of shaving? And in modern times, this becomes a real problem. Now, I'm looking at the people on the screen and looking at my Talmidim in the room. I see, Eli, what happened? You, Ariane gave you permission to grow a beard again? Fill us in.
For 3 days, not a beard.
One second. When did you observe Sphira? The first 33? So you're finished. So you're just a lazy bum. That's what it amounts to. Eli says he's a lazy bum. That's why he hasn't shaved for 3 days. I don't know. What can I tell you? I am a victim of the modern world, and nothing bothers me more than the inability to shave. What I suffered during Sphira, right, I shave on Friday. What I suffered during the 9 days, that's the longest period where I don't shave. Halavai, I should never have to, I don't want to spell it out, have another occasion when I won't be able to shave. The Ribbono Shel Olam should spare me. But Rakefet, what are you, crazy? What's wrong with not shaving? See, it's psychological, it's part of your mental makeup, it's part of the way you grew up. Right, this is what I told you with the handkerchief, with the, I don't know what class I mentioned it in, but with Rabbi Yaakov Yosef, that's a fabulous thought I gave you. It's from memoir literature, where he wants to show he's modern, he uses the word clean, and then when he blows his nose, he pulls out a European handkerchief, coming out, and you blow your nose and you put it back in your pocket, and the audience is hysterical. In America, they used little handkerchiefs and probably used it once, twice, and then washed it. It's not like today, you use tissues. But, is there a Jewish way to blow your nose? Or is it a universal way? And what do you have to, and this is the serious question, the way the world affects us. So you have to know, the Chatam Sofer took a liberal attitude. When it came to shaving, and you had a simcha and the Baal HaBrit, and all that goes with it, he took a more liberal attitude. We found with the Noda B'Yehuda, with Chol HaMoed, the famous tshuva. Again, Chol HaMoed, I was sitting right next to the Rav, right there. And I can tell you who, Eric Zimmer, Professor Yitzchak Zimmer, later at Bar Ilan University, a year or two older than I am. And he comes over to Rebbe, and has to be 57, 58, and he says, Rebbe, can I shave on Chol HaMoed? It must be before Pesach. And he told us he had some dates. He was going out with girls, and he wanted to look nice, presentable. Today, maybe if you shave Chol HaMoed, the girl will throw you out. But in those days, he married a fabulous girl. It's not that. But in those days, you want to look presentable. And the Rav says, tell me about your personal practice. Do you shave every day? And Yitzchak says, yes. The Rav says, so what's the shaila? What are you, in mourning? It's a chag, it's simcha. And you see, the Rav's whole mentality was that shaving is fine, it's good, it's modern, it's part of the gestalt of a person who's not in mourning. And the Rav was mater, without going into the Yehuda and Rav Meisha, all that's been written, the Rav was mater. What's interesting here is the Chatam Sofer gets a little bit angry, and he says, I remember there was either I saw it on a video or I read it about the Lubavitcher Rebbe, that some chassid came to the Rebbe and he was complaining to the Rebbe what people say about him. And the Lubavitcher Rebbe says, you're upset, what they say about you, and they never says, you know what they say about me? He was referring, you know, to the criticisms probably from Satmar and from the Litvisha. And so the Chatam Sofer says, they say I was matir for an ovel in Shleishim for his to shave. He says, Now let me tell you the facts. And he tells the story that this wealthy businessman came to him and he said, I have an appointment to speak with the Duke. It's during my shloshim, and if I don't make an appointment for next week, I'm going to lose a fortune of money. So, when all right, someone comes and tells you that, when you're talking about a fortune of money, so the Chatam Sofer says, I was mocked for him to shave, but there were two other conditions. Number one, that he can only meet with the Duke during the Shloshim, had to make the appointment for next week. But there were two other conditions. You know what they were? Next week had Rosh Chodesh. Make the appointment for Rosh Chodesh. In addition, that morning, someone will have a Brit and see to it that they make you the Sadek. And if that way, if you see the Chatzos says, you have already three different snifim. The loss of money, b'makom tzar, a terrific loss. Thousands of Hungarian dollars, whatever their currency was. Then you have Rosh Chodesh, okay? And then Sandakot, putting that all together, you could be able to shave and meet with the Duke. And fascinating tshuva. And then he talks about people criticize, this is Chatam Sofer talking, not Aaron Rakefet. People criticize the Jews in Austro-Hungary who shave. Why are they criticizing them? If they shave in a proper fashion, there is nothing wrong with it. And there's no concept that we have to be different than the Gentiles, that the Gentiles do shave. We shouldn't shave. We never saw that shaving is a minigakum. Shaving is just an actuality of male existence. And if you want to talk about Mukubalim, and you're citing this source and that source, he says, I can tell you that in Italy at the time of the Renaissance, Shekol hachachamecha shel Italia muguche zokhan, and they were all clean shaven. Vinitlam the Ilan Gadol, the Menachem Azaya, Bechol my Asarat my Marot, Avicha Makubalim, Shehu Hayam Gulach Mibli Hishir Sara Echad. And he says in Italy that there were endless Gedolei Yisrael who were Samach Menachem Azaya, and they were totally clean shaven. So you can't come along and criticize Jews who shave. And you can see from this tshuva, I just want to find one thing, here it is. I just want to, you can see from this tshuva that the Nodeb Yehuda had a much more lenient attitude to Jews shaving, living in the so-called modern world at that time. And he says here that, yes, there was a time when during the Gezeirot, the Crusades and what went on, that Jews chose to change their clothes and change, take off their beards so that they shouldn't be recognized as Jews. They should look like Gentiles. But it doesn't mean that shaving or not shaving is totally a Gentile versus Jewish custom. And my nephew asked me, what's the source of Pi Kabbalah? So I want to tell him, I thought it would, this is not an edited edition, as I mentioned. If this had been an edited edition, we would have the sources. But if you want the sources, I'll tell you where to go. Go to Otze Yisrael, Volume 4, page 237, Zakan. And in his and in the entry, you know what Otze Yisrael is? Again, I'm quoting something you may not even know what I'm referring to. Otze Yisrael was the first modern Jewish encyclopedia. It was put together by Yehuda David Eisenstein, who we spoke about in our Monday class when we dealt with Yaakov Yosef in the east side of New York. What's amazing about the Otze Yisrael is that it was a one-man operation. He basically put it together. I mean, he got people, others wrote all over the world, but a one-man organization, what today you would put out an encyclopedia, you'd need a staff of 100 people with computerization, etc. And he already gives sources for Italy. And in the Judaica, the Jewish encyclopedia that brought me to Israel, you go to volume 4, beginning on column 3, 5, 6, and further, you will find sources, but the Otze Yisrael has more than the Judaica. So you see the Chatam Sofer here. Now, towards the end, and here, towards the end, he mentions, yes, it could be that if communities would relocate and everyone would relocate together, it could be then that you have to continue the minhag of your previous domicile. But when you don't all go together, kiven shechuta chuta, and those are the words of the Chatam Sofer, that once you leave, and you leave en masse, and you then you might have a question to continue the traditions of your previous domicile, your previous city. But where you leave one at a time, two at a time, 10 at a time, but it's not massive, you're free to change, free to choose. There's nothing here which is really Jewish, nothing here which is really Goyish. And this is the Chatam Sofer. It's a very, very famous tshuva with a lot of implication of Austro-Hungary, influence of Germany, modern life, the Jew coming out of the ghetto, and a more benevolent attitude towards people who shave, even though they're good Jews, even though they're Rabbanim, Italy, Renaissance, Kabbalah, not one hair left on the face. And Reb Moshe quotes the Chatam Sofer because he says, yes, your question of clothes might be an important question had everyone picked up and left Europe and come to America, the entire community. Then you might have to say, Mokum Shenagu, that's, I'm calling the Gemara in Pesachim, Dafnun Aleph, the whole Shaila with traveling in Erev Shabbos. Some people did travel, some people didn't travel. If the community picked up altogether, then it could be it would be wrong. But here, it would be wrong to change. But here, what's the question? They came one by one, two by two, three by three. The father already changed. This is a son asking, a grandson asking. By this time, there is no reason to feel it is forbidden. And Reb Moshe quotes, let's quote the Shulchan Aruch now, and we'll see. Very, very fascinating. Shulchan Aruch, I believe I quoted it last week. Hilchat Chukat Ovdei Kachavim Yoredeya Siman Kuf Ayin Chet Sif Aleph. And Ein Cholchim B'Chukat Ovdei Kachavim V'lo Yubash Malbush HaMiyuchad Lehem. Okay, so we shouldn't look like Goyim, shouldn't act like Goyim. But the Rama says, V'chol ze einu asa ela b'davashan agu of daik racham lishen kritzot kigon shen agu l'bosh mal b'shim adumim v'hu ma b'sh sarim u'kidom ala ze mi mal b'shei ha-pritzot. That only Goyish clothes which is pritzot. And he gives the example they give is red, red. That's fascinating because there are women until today who will not wear a red dress. That it has an overtone of an overlook, an indication of pritzot. And however, so general clothes and even the red clothes will put aside. It could be the color of red, how it's dressed, how it looks. How it's fashioned. I don't want to say an Isser on red dresses, but I understand where it's coming from. And however, something which is worn to indicate who you are, like a doctor or professor, Rofe Mumchez, the word of the Rama, absolutely every human being can wear it. And something we do for kavod, perfectly mutter for every human being. Give you an example. Did you ever graduate college? Did you ever get a master's? Did you ever get a doctorate? You look like an idiot. You have to wear, I remember I was all dressed in black and I got my doctorate, three stripes. Ribbono shel Olam, the graduation was in June, it was hot as can be. And here we have to have long sleeves with three stripes. No, so someone will say, Minagakam, no, not Minagakam, this is Kavod. This is the universal concept of Kavod. When we got Smicha, and I gotta look up where I have my Smicha class picture, if I recall correctly, we had to rent a tuxedo, you had to be all dressed up, looking like a monkey, oh my gosh, but you couldn't complain. This is kavod, dignity. You're getting smicha, you're graduating, you're getting a certificate signed by Rav Soloveitchik. All right, it has to be kavod. And this is the halacha. It would be permissible. Ad kedei kach, the Rama goes even further, v'chein she'osin mishum kavod, otamachem muta, l'chein amru sarfim al hamalachim, the ein b'zem mishum dakei hamori. And what's that referring to? Look into the Taz. When a king dies, you take his chair, his desk, his bookcase with his essential writings, books, you burn it all. You don't want anyone else to use what the king used. How do you destroy it? How do you burn it? You find a sinach. Bal tashchet. Ribbono shel Olam. Eli came home one day and he threw a bottle of juice into the garbage. He didn't like the juice. His wife said to him, Eli, that's an issa d'oraita. Bal tashchet. Your juice, someone can drink it. What are you throwing it away? By the way, in Israel, you can walk around and you never have to work. Israel's an unbelievable, Yerushalayim at least, an unbelievable place. In my neighborhood, people put out food, the matzah. You should see what was put out after Pesach for people to take. People put out bread. I never saw anything like it. People, packages of soup. Maybe they opened one package, didn't like it. They put out five packages. Clothes all over the place. Shoes all over. No one throws anything out. They put it out, let someone else enjoy it. All right? So bal tashchet, what did you throw? Leave the bottle of juice outside. For a king, ad kedei kach, you're allowed. This is showing covet. It's not bal tashchet. And an amazing concept. An amazing concept. You're showing covet for the king by burning his possessions. Look into the Taz. Kli Pierish, Kli Tash Mishav, Mishum Kvodam, Shelo Yishtamshu, that no one else should look at them. And look into the Halacha Bet. This is Ephraim Umanashi, where I got it from. Mishu karav lamalchot v'tzarich lilbosh b'malshutayim l'damot lachem mutabakol. Ribono shel Olam. If I work in Washington, D.C., and everyone comes to work with a jacket and a tie, and you have to look dignified, and you have to take a haircut every 2 weeks, I got to go along with the crowd. Nothing wrong. Amazing, amazing. And look into the Shach, Sivkot and Gimel, and the Shach, very important Shach, that what's wrong with red clothes, this is not a nice color. Tseva shacha hu derech sniut v'hachna'a. And that it's better to wear black clothes because that shows modesty and surrender. So Vic, if you're thinking the Rebbe's a rotten, vicious, malicious, hideous, hanged, toothless, depraved, degenerate, debauched, repetitious, Oisfav, his clothes is not black, just go further in the Shach. Ah, ukud the Amrina, and as Chazal say, mi sheyitzro mitgaber alav, yilbash chorim v'yitatev chorim. Eli, if your Yetzirah gets the best of you, dress in black. I am proud to say, I do not dress in black. Reach your own conclusions. I don't want to boast. I don't have a Yetzirah. I also grew up with a Yetzirah. But Baruch Hashem, you're not going to find me in the sewer. That's all. Be'ezrat Hashem. Again, al tiftach v'atzmacha yom otcha. But nevertheless, I have a good track record for 83 years. Ani modeh l'Kadosh Baruch Hu. So that's quite halacha. Reb Moshe quotes it, and you see, as long as the clothes is not the pritzut, what's wrong with it? And the source of this is all a Marik. You look into Reb Moshe, he quotes the Marik, and only what's forbidden is pritzut v'derech gava, and outside of that, as long as it's not pritzut, and as long as it has a purpose, then a Jew can absolutely put on the clothes, and even if he looks like a non-Jew, but so what? He's a human being, and he has to wear clothes. And here I want to raise the issue that we raised in our Monday class. It has to have a purpose. Gentlemen, it may very well be that wearing a tie is totally, absolutely forbidden. What purpose does a tie have? It chokes you around the neck. That's all the tie accomplishes. What purpose? Now let's think. Underwear has a purpose. Pants have a purpose. A shirt has a purpose. Tzitzis, of course. Socks, of course. Shoes, absolutely. A tie? The shoe is now on the other foot. I challenge Art Scroll if they're going to tamper with the picture of Dr. Joseph Kamenetsky. Instead of taking off his bow tie and putting on a regular tie, they should have opened his shirt like all we good Jews in Israel go around. And Baruch Hashem, you would have had a beautiful picture of a beautiful Jew with an open shirt. All right, but I'll tell you, it could be, I don't want to leave you, Chas v'Chalila, with an Isser on a tie. I don't want to get into trouble because on May 26th, I think I'm going to have to wear a tie. I was told my grandson bought a tie for the wedding. If he bought a tie, then the Masada Kedushin has to wear a tie. So I'll tell you, what the tie accomplishes. Look at Rakepit's face. No hair, white, pale. How much does he sleep? You listen to the radio, you want to blow your brains out. Who do you have more in common with? That very question I asked an hour ago. Think about it. doesn't give me peace of mind and takes away from my strength. So a tie is wonderful. It livens you up. It's color. A tie is like a woman putting on lipstick. All right? Look at it that way.
What about the black tie?
A black tie is a real problem. That I can't answer for you. But a black tie is a problem. Better to wear a red tie with a black suit than a red suit with a black tie. But it could be, it's covered. You can learn pshat that a black tie, you go to a formal affair, everyone dresses in black and in dignity. So it could be. Efshala hatia bishat hadachak. We'll put it this way. I have to admit, in the United States, whenever I spoke on Shabbos, I always wore a tie. When in Rome, there was the Romans. It was a compromise with, I didn't want people to look at me and say, he's a slob, why isn't he? Let them worry more that I'm too fanatic than worry about the tie. All right, so that's Reb Moshe, and very, very fascinating. And Reb Moshe, again, stresses that it's only forbidden when you're doing it to look like a guy. But if it's universal, there's no problem. Reb Moshe quotes the whole concept of a doctor, of a professor, of a graduation, what if you're a barrister in London, right? Aren't there people that have to wear a shaitel? Am I right or wrong? They appear in court in a special dress, all right? All that is covered, the universal man. It's not being a guy. And Reb Moshe continues in the Tshuva, this is extremely fascinating. And Reb Moshe continues, how can you even think there's a prohibition against non-Jewish dress? Tell me, has anyone ever done a study? Who invented pants? Who invented shirts? Who says it's the Goyim? Maybe it's the Jews. Maybe they emulated us. And here I want to tell you something historically true. Baruch atah Adonai Melech Olam she'kol yeh b'dvaro. I want to tell you something historically true. 7th Avenue in New York City, Manhattan. What was it famous for? 7th Avenue, clothes, styling. We're talking the 1910s, the 20s, the 30s, into the 40s. Who owned 7th Avenue? Jews, among the biggest contributors to Torah, to good causes. It's Jewish money, came from 7th Avenue. Fashion, it's not today. Today, everything is imported. Everything is made in China and Sri Lanka. And oh my gosh, one time was Japan. Today, even in Israel, we once manufactured. I came out of big manufacturing, clothing design, etc. Very minimal today, because everyone can be paid a lot less elsewhere and come up with fine clothes and design. I don't think anyone is wearing a shirt today that was made in the Western world. And Reb Moshe says here, who says it was the Gentiles? Mi omer that the clothes we're wearing, shemu balbushe nochrim. It could very well be she meitchila hayu malbishe Yisrael. And the Gentiles copy us. And anything you say totally Gentile, perhaps you can make a case. But the clothes today, who knows how they began? And Jews and Gentiles, we're all interdependent. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with wearing universal clothes. I'm using the word universal, it's my word, but that's what Reb Meisher is saying. And then he goes back to the problem of the Chatam Sofa. And he says, if they all would have come to America together, all the DPs, all the survivors, then it could be, you make a case, this is the way my parents went, this is the way my grandparents dressed. You can make a case. There are people who until today, mevarchim bracha b'havara ashkenazis. It's hard for me even to speak in Ashkenazis. All right, I'm speaking havara svadit for 52 years. I told you, yes, Rav Gorman, my children left me when I came to Aliyah. I tried to retain in davening like the Rav would have passed, like Ron Lichtenstein did. I tried, right, they say Rav Cook. I tried to retain Ashkenaz, you know, to make Kiddush, Baruch HaTor. And my children laughed at me. I saw, oh no, this is no good. That if I'm here, I'm here. So I met Rav Gorin at the Kotel. This is going back 50 plus years. I met Rav Shlomo Gorin at the Kotel and I asked him the Shaila. He gave me so many sources that Rashi spoke Svadit, Ad Kedei Kach. But you talk about clothes, davening, all right, I can understand it. My grandfather davened, my father davened this way, I davened this way. But when they came one by one, you can no longer make that case. And Reb Meisher uses the words, I quote him now, that what happened with the DPs, with the survivors coming to America, Harehu kumishana mi bigde yehudim shebamokam echad lebigde yehudim shebamokam acher she'ein bezeh shum shash isur. That's Reb Meisher. That the clothes you wore in Europe was not specifically Jewish. It may have been universal, but it became the Jewish dress. You now came to America, and this is the way all the Jews dressed, at least during the week, in short clothes, a short jacket. So it's not changing Gentile to Gentile. It's Jewish clothes in Poland to the way Jews dressed in New York. And lahalacha, once they came one by one, two by two, not the entire community, there is no need to say, let me continue what my father did in Poland, what my grandfather did in Poland. Rav Meisher here, halacha lamaisa, is mekel. At the end of the tshuva, here we come back to reality and to life. Women's clothing. And here I have to tell you, Israel was one of the leaders in the world of clothing designed for women. It's still Gore-Tex bathing suits. Where does it come from? From Israel. And the Lubavitcher Rebbe said, again, you don't remember, I remember a world where women dressed modestly, even if they weren't religious. But the Rebbe said by the 70s when it began, he said, Ba'un Zatman kol hamabe hareza meshubach, right, the Haggadah. And now in relation to women's clothing, they say, kol hamakatzer hareza meshubach. Makatzer, the less there is, the better. I once asked, we were in Mashpil at Sochan, again, it's the early 70s, my wife was buying a bathing suit. And I couldn't get over how expensive the bikinis were. So I asked the salesperson, look, here you buy a bathing suit, you're paying, all right, there's material. And here you're buying a bathing suit with two strings, and you're paying five times as much. And she answered me, you're paying for the design. You follow? You're paying for the design. All right. This is Gore-Tex, G-O-T-E-X. It was also survivors of the Holocaust. I remember interviews with the lady who ran it. And but Rav Meisher says that בגודם שיש בהם פריצות ממש, שנעשו מחדש בבגדי נושם, that you take the clothes that they designed for women, the latest styles, without sleeves, without a neckline, etc., etc. And he says, even though Shabonatenu Harabim, Jewish women dress like this, you can't say it's usher because of Gentile clothing. Unfortunately, it's universal. The Issa here is not the pritzot. The pritzot, the Issa here is not the Gentile clothing. The pritzot doesn't make it Gentile clothing. Unfortunately, Jewish women also dress like this. But the Issa here is the pritzot. And these type of clothing are totally forbidden for all Jewish women. אבל המסך הוודאי בגודם אלו יש לאסל הנושם מצד עצם הפריצות. That's why it's forbidden. It could very well be there is no concept of מבושי נחרים, because לא עלינו in Tel Aviv at the beach, tens of thousands of women are dressed like this, and most of them are Jewish. And Rav Moshe has one final comment here. Ubumabushe enoshim en shayach zeh. That pritzot, when it comes to men's clothes, is not shayach. All right, that's an interesting question. Generally speaking, and for normative people, Rav Moshe is right that a man is attracted to a woman's body. That's the way God made the world. But vice versa, the attraction is not so strong, it's not the same. A very simple concept is women shave their feet, men walk around with hair. Women shave under their arms, men walk around with hair. A woman, most of the time, is much more attractive to who the man is, what's within him. A man can't get into within the woman until he knows the outside of the woman. It's the way the Ribbono Shel Olam made the world. But I don't know, is Reb Moshe's comment totally correct? Some of the outfits they wear today, men walk around with pants, schmans, they look like gangsters. Why? They're stiff. Their haircut, the shirt, the glasses. All right, I'm not certain there isn't pritzot by men, but certainly halacha lemaisa, the pritzot by men is nowhere near the pritzot that you will find by women, women and their clothes. Okay, now, all this is background to an unbelievable shaila that Rabbi Menashe Klein deals with. And as we'll see next time we meet, Rabbi Menashe Klein, this could only get off the floor with someone who's partially Hasidish, has been exposed to Hasidic values. Rabbi Moshe could never deal with this shaila the way Rabbi Menashe Klein deals with it. Even Rabbi Ovadia Yosef would have a lot of difficulty in dealing with the problem the way Rav Menashe Klein. But we've set the stage. Igrot Moshe, the Chatam Sofa, the questions they touch upon, the Shulchan Aruch, the Ramad, the Shach, the Taz. Next week, or 2 weeks' time, if I'm correct, next week is Shavuot, Be'ezrat Hashem. 2 weeks' time, we'll pick up again exactly where we left off. Now, for the Monday class, I have to tell you, don't want to sound as a makubal, but I had a vision that poked me very hard. There's Rat Hashem, when we meet again, and we're not meeting tomorrow. Tomorrow's Yom Yerushalayim. Tonight is Yom Yerushalayim. When we meet again, I hope to finish out Torah Masorah. And then I wanted to go to Satmar. But before I go to Satmar, adding a series of lectures, probably carry through to the end of this year, maybe the start of next year, I had a vision that I'm not being fair to three people who had a tremendous impact on the 20th century Torah scene. I've spoken about them hit and miss over the decades, but maybe it's time to accentuate their contribution. So I'm going to do three individuals. Shlomo Kalbach, Meir Kahana, and Esther Jungreis. And these are three individuals that had an impact, and I don't think we have to deal with them the day we would deal with the life of the Lubavitcher Rebbe or Rebbe Yitzchak Kuttner, where you spend 2 years a year, but the heart of who they were and what they did, what they accomplished, that leaves questions, dilemmas. I'll deal with that too. And then Be'ezrat Hashem, God should spare us, and Noach Shapiro should be listening. Yomo, give him the message. We'll go to Lubavitch. And then Be'ezrat Hashem, it'll be a year.
We'll go to
Satmar. Thank you. We'll go to Satmar. Machloikis with Lubavitch. It'll be a year's worth, and at least. And then we can go on back in time and space and place, Eastern Europe. In the Sunday class, I have so much material prepared in Reb Menashe Klein. There's the best is yet to come. This is lightweight compared to what will hit in Yoredeir and Evin Ezer. But Ben Shalom has to spare me, and age is age. And I read the interview with Willie Mays that appeared in the New York Times. He is now the eldest, Jack, you won't know what I'm talking about. Willie Mays is now the eldest living Hall of Famer. He turned 90. And he boasted, they asked him, what's the secret of your greatness? He said, I entered baseball with a waist size of 32, and I left baseball with a waist size of 32. I didn't drink, I didn't liquor, I didn't go to nightclubs, quite a lot. And then he speaks about growing old, and let me tell you, boy, Sefer Kohelet, right before our eyes. But before Yom Yerushalayim, I don't want to say anything that's sad, so we'll let you read the interview and draw your own conclusions why the Rebbe says, may the Ribbono Shel Olam spare me. We have a great day coming, and I just want to say a few words. There was so much hashgacha pratit, and anyone who lived it, again, I'm looking at students, some of you will remember, but some of you just know about it from others. I would suggest that you reread my pages about the Six-Day War in Washington. But here I was, a very happy YU graduate, totally forgetful of his B'nai Akiva roots, listening to Moria Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik, who felt very strongly, someone who spoke English and knew the American mentality and knew how to teach a Tosfot, belonged in America. And then came the Six-Day War, and I totally changed my clothes, my tie, my color. My wife and I were never the same again. And within a year, we visited Israel for the first time, part of an RCA tour. When we came back to America, we made a vow that we would settle within a year. We settled 10 months later. And I need not tell you, our whole lives changed, our whole eternity changed. God gives strength. And one of the key factors, the impression that Yerushalayim Shel Zahav, Naomi Shema, the schut that woman has is indescribable. And she was never accepted here because she was a right winger and she suffered. It's just unbelievable what we're up against here and where we stand, in my opinion, with Bennett and the Tel Aviv crowd. She was a right winger. The greatest lady, the greatest composer, the Shchuyot. And we can never forget it. Yerushalayim Shel Zahav, it was, you heard the recordings from Kol Yisrael in America, shortwave radio, and the soldiers, as they entered Jerusalem, broke into song. Yerushalayim Shel Zahav. It's based upon a Gemara with Rabbi Akiva. A lot of her songs, a book has been published that shows how many Divrei Chazal she integrated into her songs. And I have to tell you, we owe her a great debt of gratitude, but it's more than that. She chose a young chayelet, a young soldier, Shuli Natan, to sing the song. There were many famous singers in Israel, and she chose this young girl. Be hard for me to go further. Chose this young girl, and she was so successful. So there was a promoter in London, brought her to London, Shuli Natan, got out of the army. If you ever seen Shuli Natan, she's a small lady. Brought her to London, and this man sat behind a big desk. Millions of sterling were waved in front of her eyes. And he offered her contracts on top of contracts and what she would do in London and singing. And she knew English quite well. And she came back to Israel. I don't think she ever left. She said, it's not for me. This is my home. And she married, raised a beautiful family, Kanayin Hara. She's an older lady today. She was a youngster then. But she and Naomi Shema, what a pair, what they accomplished, what they did for us with Yerushalayim Shel Zahav. I want to do, and I have to be out of here. Rabbi Willick is coming in. Will Rabbi Willick also be on Zoom? Can they watch him if they want to stay awake?
He's not coming today. He's coming tomorrow.
He's coming today. You're not up to date. You're almost behind the times. He's going to the Kotel tomorrow.
Sunday at 11.
Thank you, Eli, for telling everyone that the Rebbe's mind is still with him. So now let me end up this part. Let me see Eli laugh. Let me tell you something, Eli. In my life, two strange women who are not my wife have kissed me. Okay? Listen carefully. In 69, we came in Aliyah, and there was some event where Naomi Shema was there, and we went with the kids, with my wife from Merkaz Klita, and afterwards we pushed our way up to Naomi Shema, and we told her how much the song meant to us, and it brought us an Aliyah. She jumped, lunged at me, and kissed me. Ad kedei kach. It's interesting. I was kissed one other time, but the tzveita malchat minished. Do you know Yiddish or you don't? Baruch Hashem, Ali knows a little Yiddish. The other time, the Rebbe doesn't make up stories. I've had some life with stories. Other time, I'm in New York on my Russian courses working to help turn Yomo into a Jew. He's still in Kiev. And I'm at 1025 Fifth Avenue at the home of the Kabakals. Great, great people. We work together. Bernie is not that well today. He's older. Seal is gone. The children, many are here. Some of them, wonderful, wonderful people. So I had to go downtown, and I take the Fifth Avenue bus. I'm now on the Fifth Avenue to bus, looking like a total guy, reading the New York Times, right, dressed like a, right, minding my business. And a lady comes over to me, and she says, "Are you a rabbi?" I say, "Yes." "Do you have three daughters?" I say, "Yes." "You lived in Maplewood?" She jumps at me and kisses me. Watch. On the bus. Anything goes. I say, "Who are you?" I don't mention her name. I say, "Oh." This was a girl running away from her home whom I counseled in Maplewood in my kehila, mad at her parents. And I say to her, I remembered her name. I still remember it. Somebody, we start talking. And she, and she's very upset now. She just broke off with the woman. She was living with an alternative lifestyle. So I said, "Thank God I read the New York Times. I knew what alternative lifestyle meant. Now you understand, Ellie, that kiss didn't bother me." Rabbeinu Shelaylem, a lesbian kisses you, big deal. Oh my gosh. So, but that brought me back to Naomi Shemach. And when I got off the bus, I did what then I got back. I told Malcolm, boy, oh boy, I told her the story. We couldn't get over it. And it shows you when someone hates their parents, there's a problem to begin with. Psychologists have a lot of work to do. Well, I can only be the victim, not anything else. Okay. Norm Schless is not here. I just want to show you something. This is an article that appeared in Vogue magazine. How Orthodox women are using social media to liberate each other from dead marriages. I don't know if the word dead, I would use the word failed marriages. I don't know. Am I right or wrong? What do you think, Yomo? You're always correcting my English. Dead marriages, failed marriages. Now, this picture is very nice. The women are all dressed sneistically. There's
zombie.
What?
Zombie.
I can't hear. There's no priest here. The clothes, but it's a very sad article that we have to go. But I'm the aide of Vogue magazine, which is read by a million people across the world, and wash our dirty linens in public. And here I say again and again, we have to educate youngsters from grade one on that husband and wife have to respect each other and love each other and treat each other with dignity. And later in life, when they're a little older, we have to mention that if a marriage doesn't work out, we have to quote the Medrash, how they get married with song and dance, get divorced with song and dance. Remember my lectures, get divorced like mentioned. And later in life that has to be accomplished. Okay, I want to round off the class here and let me open it for any questions across the world. I want to thank everyone for joining with me. It's a lot happening around us, and thank God we're able to learn Torah. It's and look, even if I say I choose the Haredi world, it's not that I understand the problems. The Haredi world creates an image. They take, they don't give. Not serving in the army is a tremendous halachic problem. Al Pidin, every male over the age of 18, from Teaneck to Flatbush, to all of Israel, elsewhere as well, I don't know any heter not to serve in the Jewish army. It's pikuach nefesh, habola hagecha, hashken v'hargo. And the Arabs don't want us here, period. It's not just they don't want us in the old city. They don't want us in Jaffa. They don't want us in Holon, in Lod. What's going on? Habola hagecha, hashken v'hargo. I understand the Guardian just declared England's greatest mistake was to call for a Jewish state 100 years ago. That's what Yomo showed me today on the computer. We got to go further in dignity, and every Jew who comes in Aliyah adds strength to our cause. It makes your life unbelievably meaningful, and the end result has apocryphal implications. Until we meet again in health and happiness here, Das Vedanya. Yomo, can you open it to the world? What Morty would generally do.
The recording has stopped.
Is everyone unmuted? Okay. Can you hear me? Can anyone speak? Anyone have any questions?
Rebbe?
Yeah, go ahead.
Couple things. One, in terms of Brachlava Tala, I don't remember the source, but I remember hearing a Shaila where there was a Heter, the Rav of a Shul, who missed a day and normally wouldn't
account.
Make the Bracha.
Shouldn't be embarrassed.
He was matur, they were matur that he could make the bracha.
Okay.
And another thing with...
It was at the end of a week.
I understand.
I don't think so. I don't think that was the issue. So also with the matzo balls, the Gaon had 8 matzo balls. I heard he hung them from the window. The Rav said when he was a kid, he thought there were 3 dipping speed fields, whatever he said, that... it was the matzah in the water, because Reb Chaim was choshesh. He didn't use matzah balls. I had to say it because he was choshesh that might be matzah shira. Another thing that they speak of, a big kavod, is a 21-gun salute. But a regular veteran funeral, you're lucky if you have a few people. They don't have 21 guns at every...
No. We're talking about someone who died in battle. Talking about someone who died...
21 is the head of state, 19 is head of government, I think.
Oh, yeah, okay. But
there's a whole list of different numbers.
In Israel, it would be only someone who died in battle, not a veteran. We're talking about someone who died in battle. That's when the Shaila comes up with the 21-gun salute. As far as the matzah... So whatever it is, all I can tell you is all my life I heard that the Vilna Gaon ate Kneid Lach Leil HaSeder.
The Gaon did,
yeah. Yeah, that's all I heard. But maybe I'm... okay.
Another thing I did hear that some NCSY students were brought to the Rav in New York to meet with him. And from what I recall, somebody asked him about sneus for men. So from what I heard, the Rav said not to wear pink pants. I just heard that little mice of it.
Very good, very good. I can't...
Rebbe?
Yes, Nachum. Go ahead.
What you said at the beginning about the woman with the baby, a couple of things. First of all, there are a lot of exceptions. You could also say she had a miscarriage.
It's
a similar problem, but I remember that my brother, when he was dating, not his wife, but years before, he asked his Rebbe, Rav Kahana, when Torah Vadas, there was a coin too. So he said, how far do I have to ask as a Kohen, to see whether this woman ever did this? I mean, obviously not a case like a divorcee, but, like Arizona, something like that. And I remember he said, Rav Kahana said to him, it's hard enough to get married. Don't ask questions. Don't expect answers. Like, some of these things, there's a little bit of leeway, he was saying.
What we do is we go with a rove. Reb Moshe Davatunde once spoke about it, but I have to be honest. Ashvacha heta. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
The world today, I know what's going on. I saw with my own eyes people I know. Again, we the fallaway rate is sad. We're losing, in the Haredi world, Matsuni, that we're losing 15 to 20% of the kids. Why? One of the answers are you need proper teachers, you have to inspire. A second answer is never push a kid away. Kids ask questions. If you can't give an answer, let the question hang fire. But don't push the kid away because they asked a good question. I wish we could all have Rabbeim like the Rav. That's all I can say. The greatness of the Rav, when I look back, the man was so open. You could ask him whatever you want. He lived in your world. He understood your world. There was a great kind of broadness. This is why in that picture I identified everyone, which I consider a great achievement. I'm boasting a little bit, all right? The moron is boasting that he identified 29 people in a picture 60 years later. All right, I have a right to boast. But what's interesting is how so many different hashkafas came out of that class. And that was the greatness of the Rav. There was a certain openness, a certain flexibility. In modern times, we need that very much. People cannot be brainwashed. And people have to think on their own. We miss great teachers. But when all is said and done, someone just said to me, and I've heard it from more than one person, thank God he's not a homo, she's not a lesbian, and even if they're not from, be thankful, they'll come back one day. And people I know from the finest homes, they're shacked up, boy, girl, man, God, it hurts. But okay, Ein Malasat, I went
to... I had a perspective date once who had asked two rabbanim if she could go out with the kohen. One said yes, one said no. And the one that said yes, to avoid talking about certain things, she wasn't comfortable with it, so we never went out.
I can't comment. Whatever.
A couple of things quickly. It would be no Ella that the Rambam would not mention Shalom Rav, because Sfaradim and Eidot Mizrach never say Shalom Rav. My question would be, in Chaslovich, it would have been Nesach Ari, which doesn't say it for Myrav either. So if he were consistent, did the Rav say Shotzim Shalom for Myrav?
I don't know. He has to ask Rabbi Gopin. Rabbi Gopin is going to come out now with a volume on the Rav and all this and hug him and
prayer. Yeah, and on the Pidyon HaBen story, if the story
I think Yamin HaTzom only say Shalom Rav.
What if he sees the Tshuva later?
Well, there's no name. What's the problem? He can imagine. It's nothing to do with him. There's no name. You don't have a name of the couple, so it can be another 100 different people. What's Maishim B'chol Yom? But it's
and a... You mentioned Baal Hashchut as a Deoraita. Aside from fruit trees, isn't it mostly Drabbana?
All right, I'll accept that emendation. But the Yisr is based on Deoraita, who have fruit trees. Ha'adam Eitz HaSader. It's a powerful pasuk with a powerful concept.
Right, of course. Things are not back to normal here yet, and not much is going on for Yom Yerushalayim, but since we can go on Zoom anywhere in the world, is there anything going on there, either at Grus or the Rabbanut, or officially on Khan 11?
There's the Kotel. Eli, what's going on at Grus tomorrow? You have a Suda, and who's speaking? Rav Miller speaking. You don't have an outside guest?
Rabbi Willick.
So I know Rabbi Willick canceled Monday because he wants to go to the Kotel.
Rav Miller spoke at the Levaya last week, I heard.
He was, Rav Berg was there in 1967. I remember he wrote a beautiful story about it, how he went to the Kotel right after Shavuot,
Right, when they opened the Kotel with Shavuot. What Levaya, one second, what Levaya are you talking about?
So is the thing at Grus tomorrow on Zoom?
I don't know, I can't answer. Yomo, is it on Zoom?
I think Mizrahi in the States on Mizrahi TV is having something. And I think maybe Rav Ben Nash is doing something for them. I have to look at my emails.
You can also...
Like, what's happened?
You can also...
Mizrahi, the religious Zionists of America.
There's also...
I have on the Roku, I can get about 5 or 6 stations still. The other ones don't come anymore. But I can say I'm just working on making 2 exams at the same time.
There's also a website for the Kotel, I think even two websites.
Yeah, right.
And there's also our Rit Sheva, which will broadcast direct. Whatever's happening at the Kotel, you'll see in our Rit Sheva. All right, I have to clear the room because Rabbi Willig is coming in. I'll leave. Yomo, can I leave the Zoom on in case Rabbi Willig...
You're probably going to use a different...
Okay, so whatever it is, let them know. Until we meet again in health and happiness, Das Vedanya, thank you very much for bearing with me today. And have a fabulous Yom Yerushalayim and a fabulous Kabbalat HaTorah on Yom Matan Torah.